Hello everybody, hope you're all doing well, as well as you can be in these strange days. Just to have a wee chat about something I find really difficult to do is being still before God and making time to be still. So I'm going to read Psalm 46. I'm sure it's fairly familiar to you. God is our refuge and strength, an ever-present help in trouble. Therefore we will not fear, though the earth give way and the mountains fall into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam and the mountains quake with their surging. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy place where the Most High dwells. God is within her, she will not fall. God will help her at break of day. Nations are in uproar, kingdoms will fall. He lifts his voice, the earth melts. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. Come and see the works of the Lord, the desolation he has brought on the earth. He makes war cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the shields with fire. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. So, as a child back on the housing estate, being still was something I didn't do much of. But one of the times I did become still is when I went fishing. So it was very accessible. There was at the bottom of our street was a disused canal system. This disused canal system was fed by a reservoir that was still had some water in it and some fish. So me and my brother would go down to the fishing pond with our tackle, and it was the adventurous route we would take. So we would take our fishing baskets, and my brother, I think, had a box, rod, probably already connected up and stuff with our reel and float and hook and maggots. My mum wouldn't let us keep our maggots in the fridge for some strange reason. I don't know why. They used to last longer that way. Off we'd go. So we'd have the obstacle of getting across the lock gates. So the gates were partially burnt. Separated in the middle and hanging off at the hinges. There was no water in the lock, and the lock was full of broken bowls, glass, prams, bicycles, that sort of thing. So falling into the empty lock about, I don't know, 15 feet would have been pretty disastrous. So we'd wander across this this lock to the reservoir and go fishing. Now the fishing pond is quite interesting, how your brain works and things. The fishing pond was about 500 yards, maybe a kilometre at most, away from where we were fishing. It was away from the M6. We used to go early in the morning, go up at 4 o'clock in the morning, because that's when you caught most fish. And the noise of the motorway as we fished progressively got noisier and noisier as the traffic got busier and busier. But interestingly enough, you didn't really hear the noise until you stopped fishing, because we were so concentrating on that float, staring at that float for hours on end, waiting for a fish to pull it under, that the noise actually didn't exist. The noise, you know, when we were focused on that float, concentrating on that, on the fishing, the noise didn't exist. In John 10, it talks about Jesus calling our name, and that's how we recognize him. I tell you the truth, the man who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate, but climbs in by some other way, is a thief and a robber. The man who enters by the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The watchman opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. It was interesting when Mary went to the tomb and noticed that the rock had been moved away. And then she ran back, and John and Peter come running along, tearing past her, see that the tomb's empty and that the linen cloths and the wrappings are there in the tomb. And then they obviously, you know, oh, okay, what are we going to do now? And then just wander off. But Mary stays around. She hangs about. And the angels appear in there, and they ask her why she's crying. And then she says, you know, my Lord has gone, you know. And then she turns around, and what she thinks is the gardener, and says to the gardener, well, you know, if you've taken him, tell me where he is, and I'll go and get him. And she recognised who Jesus was when he used her name, just called her Mary, and then recognised exactly who he was by his voice. So the disciples are in Jerusalem. They are holding up in some building somewhere, and he's locked because they're frightened about the Jews, what they're going to do to them. And they're in this locked building, and Jesus appears amongst them on two occasions. And on the second occasion, Didymus there, Thomas was there, and he was shown that, yes, look, he's the horse. He's the proof of who I am. It's interesting how, over the years, I suppose, I can understand that my childhood, which was pretty happy, you know, I used to love fishing and stuff, as I was telling you about. My childhood was, and my walk with God has been affected, I suppose, or influenced by my image of my dad. And I knew that my dad loved me. The first time I ever saw him cry was when I was at primary school age, and I'd been cheeking my mum, and my mum was the sort of, wait till your dad comes home. And when did he come home? And he worked really hard, and sometimes he worked 100 hours in a week. And for many years, 10 years, he was a fireman on British Rail, which was then at that time actually shoveling coal for 10 years on steam engines. So he was pretty tired. So when he came home, he was told what I'd done, and I can't remember what I'd done now. And he chased me up the stairs. He chased me up the stairs, and as I ran up the stairs, I slipped, and I pulled the toenail away from the top of my foot, and could see the blood. I don't know if I had socks on or not, I can't remember, but you could quite clearly see the blood coming out of my foot. And when my dad saw this, he absolutely sobbed. He's crying and crying and crying. And he just couldn't, he was almost inconsolable. And I realised, even though he was quite a awesome sort of strong sort of leader of a guy, he's an amazing guy. In that circumstances, I recognised just how much he loved me. It's just amazing. And what he would do sometimes, he would take the time out to take us fishing to the River Severn. Now, when he took us fishing to the River Severn, it was a big day out, and we had an opportunity to do some real fishing, like fishing we'd seen on the TV, some real fishing. And so he had absolutely no interest in fishing at all. He just didn't understand it. He couldn't believe that people would just sit there on a riverbank for hours on end, trying to get a fish out of the water on the end of a little hook with something on the end, like luncheon meat, I think we used when we were in the River Severn trying to catch barbel. He just couldn't understand it at all. But he took us there in the car, so we would have a great time. But one of the things he did, which was fantastic, he used to take a little gas stove along. And this gas stove, he used to put some bacon on. And he'd make us a bacon sandwich on the riverbank. It was absolutely fantastic. Then he would go and get himself a newspaper and go for a little walk. And then, you know, just about 2 o'clock in the afternoon when he was couldn't run out of things to do, he'd say, right, come on, pack up, let's go. So, and on one occasion, my brother caught this huge, massive barbel. He was just shaking when he put it out of the water, and he was in his arms, and he was a young lad, but he was still, you know, 6 feet when he was 15, so huge, massive fish. So absolutely amazing. And one of the things that I've always, not always, but has really impressed me about Jesus is him making breakfast. And Mark Ingalls mentioned this on the posting that May put on the WhatsApp group. It's always impressed on me for lots of reasons, the making breakfast for his disciples. So it's quite interesting, the disciples, I say, they've been holding up in this huts for a while, all locked in, and Jesus appeared to them and said, peace be with you. And then he said something quite interesting. He said basically to go out and just teach what I've been teaching you to do, you know, show them what I'm all about. So we find this bit in John when they go off fishing, and it's quite interesting that it says after Jesus appeared again to his disciples by the Sea of Tiberias, that's Galilee, and it happened this way. And it talks about Peter saying, let's go fishing, but actually they're in Lake Galilee, which is 73 miles away from Jerusalem. So it wasn't really a spur of the moment thing. So Peter sort of encouraged some of the disciples. I think seven of them went to Galilee. Now, Galilee is an amazing place. It doesn't get any colder than 14 degrees during the winter. So it's very good for farming and fruit and animals and fishing. And so it's, you know, a great place to be. Even in the winter, it's quite warm. So I can understand why they wanted to have to go to Galilee. And also Jesus did some amazing things around Galilee. So they were sort of returning back to where they had great memories and stuff, and can see why they turned up there. But the thing was, they'd been fishing all night. And I suppose they had time to think and time to just be still. It might have been windy, but generally speaking, I think, certainly my experience is that in the evening, the wind is less windy. You know, there's less wind, I should say. And everything's a bit calmer. And in the early hours of the morning, you know, having worked night shifts and stuff, there's an incredible, there's a sense of peace in the early hours of the morning. Once you've gone over that 4 a.m. Feeling, your body wants to just turn off, then you start to feel this peace, and your body clicks back into being a bit more awake again. And they've caught nothing. They've been fishing. I thought, let's go fishing. Let's do this. Yeah, let's go back to what we know we can do. And nothing happened. And then as they're hungry, a bit tired, and they've gone back to what they know, and heading back to the shore. And they're not far from the shore, about 100 metres, it was saying in scripture, about 100 metres from the shore. It's interesting that it completely backs up the lake. And if you have a read about what the lake's depths are near to shore for a long period of time, it's very shallow, and then it shelves quite deeply. So about 100 yards offshore, it would probably be about waist deep or something. And Peter, you know, fisherman, he'd know that. He recognised who the person was on the beach with the coals, with the fire, with the fish, with a bit of bread, fresh bread, on the fire. And he just jumps in, he couldn't help himself, and he runs to Jesus. And when they get there, he says, he said, bring some of those fish that you've just caught and let's have some breakfast. Now, you would have thought, wouldn't you, as Mark was saying, that he would have been saying, what are you playing at? Yeah, what are you doing? But no, he said, let's have some breakfast. And then later on, he went and asked Peter to take over his church. And I think it's fantastic that we have a God who understands us. He understands our needs, and he understands that we get hungry. He understands we get cold. And he fulfilled all those needs for the disciples on that beach in probably one of the most beautiful places in Jerusalem, in Israel, sorry. I've never been to Israel, but I believe I've seen pictures on the internet and stuff. It looks a pretty amazing place, Galilee. And a very busy tourist destination was until the lockdown. And interestingly enough, the water at the moment is back up to its levels. It's not been for 2 decades apparently, and it's all ready and singing to go. It's never been better there just now, but nobody's there obviously because of the lockdown. So yes, so being still, like the guys were in the boat at night doing a bit of fishing. And it's so important to be still and know that God is for you, and he loves you. And it's not like when you're being caught out, like they were fishing, a bit like Jesus saying they were caught out. Yeah, what are you doing here fishing? You should be going there spreading gospel and telling them all about me. Not here fishing. No, he made them breakfast. And saying earlier on about my dad, and he was great, but he would say sometimes to me, if I did something wrong, he'd say, get out my sight, get out my sight. And our God is completely the opposite.